We will start the meeting with the reading of the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles. Through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teachings, and therefore it has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis. And its aim is to disseminate these ideas as theosophists, all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves, by study or otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect and yet belongs to each and all. Now, here in Philadelphia, we are one of many lodges that are situated throughout the world, and each one runs on their own schedules and their own subject matters, and yet the one thing that is constantly perceived and given from the platform is straight theosophical teachings from the original teachings. So here in Philadelphia, to our part, we meet twice a week. On Sundays, we have talks and discussions. Doors open at 10:30. We start promptly at 11, and we're over promptly at noon. In the series that we're working on now for April, The Mystery of the Mind, today we will be doing The World of Dreams, and next Sunday will be The Mystery of Genius. Then also on Wednesday evenings, our reference library is open from 5:30 to 7:30, just prior to the Wednesday night meeting, which starts at 7:45, and it's over at 9. We are studying the Ocean of Theosophy, and this coming Wednesday, we will continue with cycles, but now we're going to be speaking of physical and historical cycles. We have one other meeting coming up on Saturday, April 28th, which is really an Inner Lodge Symposium. It's going to be held at the Ethical Society right across the park from Rittenhouse. And it's called A New Cycle of Opportunity and Challenge. For anyone interested, they can pick up a sheet at the book table on their way out. All the books that are on that book table, by the way, are straight theosophical literature, books, pamphlets, or magazines. They can be purchased before and after meetings and during libraries hours. And all work done at this lodge, as is all lodges situated throughout the world, is left up to each individual to volunteer of their time, their service, and their money. All are most needed and all are most welcome. Now this morning, our introductory reading is from the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna is speaking to Krishna and he is asking questions. What, O Keshava, is a description of that wise and devoted man who is fixed in contemplation and conformed in spiritual knowledge. What may such a sage declare? Where may he dwell? Does he move and act like other men? Krishna, a man is said to be confirmed in spiritual knowledge when he forsaketh every desire which entereth into his heart and of himself is happy and content in the self, through the self. His mind is undisturbed by adversity. He is happy and content in prosperity, and he is a stranger to anxiety, fear, and anger. Such a man is called a Muni. When in every condition he receives each event, whether favorable or unfavorable, with an equal mind, which neither likes nor dislikes, his wisdom is established, and having met good or evil, neither rejoices at the one nor is cast down by the other. He is confirmed in spiritual knowledge when, like the tortoise, he can draw in all his senses and restrain them from their wanton purposes. The hungry man loses sight of every other object but the gratification of his appetite. And when he has become acquainted with the Supreme, he loses the taste of all the taste for all objects of whatever kind. The tumultuous senses and organs hurrying by force, the heart even of the wise man who striveth after perfection. Let a man, restraining all these, remain in devotion at rest in me, his true self. For he who has his senses and organs in control possesses spiritual knowledge. Therefore, O great armed one, he is possessed of spiritual knowledge whose senses are withheld from objects of sense. What is night to those who are unenlightened is as day to his gaze. What seems as day is known to him as night, the night of ignorance. Such is a self-governed sage.
Well, the general umbrella topic for our Sunday talks and discussions this month has been the mystery of mind. And so, if our talk today is the world of dreams, which sometimes seems to that much that we can perceive about our dreams often actually kind of seems mindless because we don't understand what they are. How does this correspond? How does this world of dreams correspond to our mind? And can we take some steps in a direction that'll help us solve this mystery? Well, we'd like to begin this morning with a passage from the Key to Theosophy. Again, we say that love beyond the grave, illusion, though you may call it, has a magic and divine potency which reacts on the living. A mother's ego, filled with love for her imaginary children, sees it near herself, living a life of happiness as real to it as when on earth. That love will always be felt by the children in the flesh. It will manifest in their dreams and often in various events, in providential protections and escapes. For love is a strong shield and is not limited by space or time. So the love of a Devakani, some way, some world, somehow can make it from the world of that individual's Devakonic experience into the world of our dreams. Is there anything more real than a mother's love for her children? Well, if the answer to this is a resounding no, then we can use this as a basis that it is reasonable to accept that what is ever going on in our dreams can have a very real impact on this waking state if we set the conditions necessary to allow that to happen. So what are those conditions? If one decides to take up the study of dreams in theosophical literature, he will find that he goes from the subject of mind and the mystery of mind and the higher and lower mind, and we'll talk about that in a moment, and he will find that he'll have to study and somehow come to understand, to the best of our ability, the nature of the inner man, that we are not just this physical form, but rather this physical form is a temporary form which is used by what we call the inner man. We use this physical form, and it is one, but yet the thinking man who uses the form is septenary, and we'll come to understand that the septenary nature of man plays into our understanding of what's going on in the dream world. We'll have to accept that, or we'll probably come to understand that a lot of our dreams just don't make sense, but in certain ways they could, and we have the control to some limited extent at this stage, but much more influence to a greater extent to be able to benefit from the dreams and the messages of our dreams. And we'll also have to accept that the language of dreams is not English. Neither is it a language that can be learned in any particular school on this plane. Neither is it a language that can be taught to us by someone else, because the language of the soul for each individual is unique. That's not to say that souls do not commune and communicate among themselves, but the language that is used is one which, for our purposes, if we're going to understand what this dreaming and what the world of dreams is all about, we'll have to understand that we will need to make adjustments if we're to be able to understand our dreams better or learn from them more somehow. Now, we're told that there are three states of consciousness that mankind generally is able to experience or has access to. Of course, we've learned about the septenary nature of the universe, and an adept has mastered, an advanced adept has mastered seven planes of consciousness. For most people on planet Earth, that is not a consideration for this talk, but coming to better understand three particular planes of consciousness is the subject of the talk. And those planes of consciousness are known as the waking state, the dreaming state, and the state of dreamless sleep. Now, as one might come to study this in the literature, we'll find there are Sanskrit terms used, so here's our vocabulary lesson for the day. And it's the only time we're going to use the words. The waking state is jagrata. The dreaming state is swapna. And the dreamless sleep state is sushupti. Now, we are told that as we evolve, as mind evolves, as we develop, according to our own responsible actions and reactions, according to self-devised means and self-induced methods, as we evolve, one of the things that must be done to regenerate ourselves or to reach full enlightenment is we must accomplish and fully, we must accomplish a full understanding of these three states of consciousness: waking, dreaming, and dreamless sleep. And it is possible for man to do so at our stage of development. One step in that direction is understanding that development really can only happen as an effect of what we do during the waking state. So we can't dream ourselves into enlightenment. No adept has dreamt himself into enlightenment. We have to put causes in action here on this plane, within ourselves, and of course, more importantly, for benefit of others. The effects of this, of what goes on in waking consciousness, affects our dreaming state. And the effect of our dreaming state affects, we're not going to say it affects dreamless sleep, but what it does is it affects our ability to come back from that state, that deep state of dreamless sleep, to bring the full benefits of whatever it is that our higher ego experienced during dreamless sleep. To be able to benefit from that, we have to set up certain conditions so that we don't, you know, really just destroy or distort or confuse whatever the experience was. And so perhaps an analogy for this is waking state is here on the earth. Dreaming state might be the atmosphere, and dreamless sleep would be something beyond the atmosphere. So if we're in a space shuttle, Kennedy Space Center certainly is not going to send the space shuttle into orbit while a monsoon is going on, is it? That monsoon would what? Would wipe out the shuttle. It might not even make it out of the atmosphere. Well, analogously, when we go to sleep and we start to move into the dreaming state and then eventually to the dreamless state, if we are caught up in our own passions and desires and crazy things are going on and we're distracted, if our mind is distracted, lower manas does not allow for the conditions to be right on this plane so that when we return, we'll have a clear understanding of the dream. Why is that? Because whatever the conditions of our emotion and our mind is when we fall asleep, well, the brain starts to fall asleep first, doesn't it? And the body follows it. So the conditions are the same. In the morning, as we awaken, those conditions haven't changed. And so as the space shuttle comes back from outer space into the atmosphere, that storm is still going on. And if the space shuttle is the consciousness and the dream and the benefit of dreams, it could well come in for a crash landing and we wake up and have no idea that there even ever was a space shuttle. And that's the case for a whole bunch of us, isn't it? Maybe some of us sometimes remember our dreams. There are plenty of people who almost never remember their dreams. There are even people who really don't believe that they dream. But the philosophy says not only does everybody dream, but that every being, every organism with a brain or other mechanisms that serve the same function as a brain, right down to an ant, every living being dreams. So, we're told, Mr. Judge tells us that the conditions, those conditions that we have to create to more fully benefit and understand our dreams, first and foremost is we have to be, he says, concentrated. And that is, what we understand that to be is we need to be, at the end of the day, let it go. Be focused. Well, focused on what? And what do we concentrate? How do we concentrate our mind? Well, we concentrate the powers of our mind. And when we say that, the philosophy tells us that the five powers of our mind are what? Are thought, will, feeling, memory, and imagination. And so if we bring these all together and focus them on a higher, on a universal, on an altruistic idea, then as we fall asleep, our mind, or our consciousness actually, isn't it raised above the fluidity and the vicissitudes of our passions and desires? And it is more in the realm of higher mind and higher matters. If we are there when we fall asleep, then we move into the dreaming state with less effects of what had been going on during the day, and pass into dreamless sleep with conditions that are ready in the dreaming state to be more receptive to whatever it is that we experience in this dreamless state. Well, what is that? During this dreamless phase of sleep, we're told that it is a universal state. All human beings move into this state. We are in communication in communication with higher beings and learn more about higher purposes, and it serves a purpose. This dreamless state of sleep serves its purpose to the altruist and the criminal alike. In fact, we're told that the fact that it is available for all of humanity, and it is a birthright of humanity, actually serves to protect humanity, because even the most vicious among us do enter every night this dreamless sleep where they experience where the inner man, who they truly are, does experience this repose, this relaxation, and this communing with higher intelligences. So, the conditions having been set right when the individual goes to bed, all is calm, and when his consciousness moves from dreamless sleep back into the dreaming state, it could be that those dreams are more vivid, more coherent, and it could well be that the purpose for the day, or the ideas that he experienced during dreamless sleep, will more clearly and fully make it through to his waking state. One analogy that is used is, if we go to bed with so much on our mind and distracted and concerned and worried, our consciousness returns to an environment that is kind of like sand falling through a sieve. And each stream of sand in that sieve is just another strain of confused thought, all of which is different from each other. But if we are concentrated when we fall asleep, then when we return to the waking state, we return more through a single pipe through which water flows, and it's a more coherent understanding experience than previously. Than if we weren't concentrated. So, those are some of the ideas. I guess we got ahead of ourselves. That's okay. In a practical way, what are some of the benefits? What are some of the benefits that mankind has experienced as a result of dreams? Well, on the one hand, Paul McCartney heard the melody to Yesterday in his dream, and when he woke up, he went right to the piano, played it, and wrote it out. Also, Otto Loewi was awarded a Nobel Prize for demonstrating something about nerve impulses and chemical transmissions, something that had perplexed science of his day for a long time. And he had an intuition that it was based in some kind of chemical or chemical reaction. He learned in a dream how to set up an experiment that would prove his idea, his hypothesis, and as a result of that, it really helped the scientific community, and he was awarded a Nobel Prize for it. Abraham Lincoln dreamt of his assassination a few days prior to his dream. Then there's always Friedrich August Kekulé von Stratonitz, who had a dream that helped him discover the benzene molecule. This was at a time where science was identifying and hypothesizing on the structure of molecules, and it was very important to understand how the benzene molecule played into this overall picture, and they couldn't figure it out. And what he said, his dream was, he found that the molecule had a circular structure rather than a linear one. In the dream, long rows, sometimes more closely fit together, all twining and twisting in little snake-like motion. But look, what was that? One of the snakes had seized hold of its own tail, and the form whirled mockingly before my eyes. He had discovered the benzene ring. He took that hypothesis, put it on paper, and added, you know, connected all the dots and said it has to be a ring for this to work. Then also the gentleman who invented the sewing machine had been working on it for years, but couldn't figure out how to get the needle to thread the two pieces of fabric together so that it was functional. And he had a dream one night that resulted in him. He was being chased by natives, and these natives all had spears. And the front of the spears had holes in them. He woke up and he realized, that's it. I have to put the hole in the front of the needle and thread it in the front, and that's how to make it work, and thus we have our sewing machines. I'm sorry? Okay. And then there are others. We may have all heard of the movie Lorenzo's Oil, which was involved with developing either a cure or a medicine that helped the conditions for these children with Lou Gehrig's disease. And the challenge was to figure out what was going on, why was the myelin sheath deteriorating from the nerve endings, and we understand that it was this young boy's father who'd been trying to figure this all out. He wasn't an MD, but in a dream, he saw paperclips interacting with each other, and having educated himself on the microbiology of fatty acids and stuff because of his son, he realized that the challenge going on was a single enzyme was shared between the fatty acid that built the myelin sheath and the fatty acid that destroyed the myelin sheath. And having learned this, they were able to design a certain methodology to improve the children's conditions. We don't know all the particulars, but it's a movie was made about this. So those are some practical applications of what can we do in this world with the dreams that we experience in, so to speak, another world. But also, as we discuss this, and we'll finish up in a moment, it will help to bear in mind that not all dreams are brought back with us from the dreamless sleep state or the dream. Some of the dreams that we have are just nonsense from our lower mind and our passions. So as we go through this list, there are seven classes of dreams that HPB outlines for us. As we go through this list, consider which of these require and therefore prove the existence of the inner man. Which of them require active cooperation of the inner man to have this dream? First, prophetic dreams. These are impressed on our memory by the higher self and are generally plain and clear, either a voice heard or the coming event is foreseen. Second, allegorical dreams. Hazy glimpses of realities caught by the brain and distorted by our fancy. These are generally only half true. Third, dreams sent by adepts, good or bad, by mesmerizers, or by the thoughts of very powerful minds bent on making us do their will. Fourth, retrospective dreams of events belonging to past incarnations. Fifth, warning dreams for others who are unable to be impressed themselves. Sixth, confused dreams, the causes of which have to do with the lower mind and the passions and desires. And finally, seventh, dreams which are mere fancies and chaotic pictures owing to problems with digestion, some mental problem, or such like external cause. So those are some of the ideas that the philosophy presents to us. We're sure you've got ideas that you've brought with you and questions. The floor is open for discussion. Yes?
In our dream state, not the dreamless sleep, but the dreaming part, can we communicate with others, or are we communicating with our higher self, and it seems like we're communicating with others?
During our dreaming state, do we communicate with others, or is it only with our higher self? Well, as we recall, the dream state is a subjective state. Certainly it's subjective to the sleeper, and yet it's objective to the seer who is experiencing the dream. We would have to say, and we're certainly open to other contributions, our understanding is that dreams are affect states, the causes of which are set up during the waking state. That being the case, it's that world of dreams is one which we create for ourselves with our mind, and under normal circumstances, we don't know that one typically communicates or interacts with other individuals. Is there a yes in the corner?
Well, the other thing is, too, a lot of our dreams are symbolic. And the higher beings especially. So coming back to the same way we went out to work up that way, we're going to try to figure it out with things we know on this plane, and it doesn't make any sense to most of us.
Right. So the contribution here is the ideas that we bring back from dreamless sleep come through this dreaming state and accordingly are clothed in certain symbols, colors, visions, etc. And the question is, can the individual, can the waking man properly interpret what that dream is representing? Well, on the one hand, no, because if it's the physical man who's trying to interpret the symbol of the dream or what the dream is all about, well, the physical man wasn't there, and the physical man doesn't speak that language. So the more that we make the effort to identify who we are with our higher nature, the closer we come to the ability, at least rudimentarily at first, to recognize that there's meaning here. What's the meaning? It takes practice because the language of the soul is color, it is pictures, It is symbols, and it's very, it's an intuitive process to properly interpret it. Yes.
Well, in the popular mind these days, there is supposed to be the possibility of two people meeting in the dream state. There's books about it, and we think classes about it. And we would wonder if it isn't perhaps, if one wakens with that sort of memory, if it isn't an experience from the deep sleep state where those two souls did meet and confer on something and both remember it. The problem is there's no way for anyone to ever answer that question unless they're an adept.
Right. So as was said, on in the dreamless sleep state, we communicate with higher intelligences, and we may well communicate at times among ourselves and with our family. Who's to say? But that's just it. Who's to say? Let's make no doubt about it. The philosophy encourages us to investigate these issues, to learn more about our dreams, to learn more about our dreams is really to learn more about how we think and what we think about, and to learn more about what adjustments need to be made in our thinking. Because until we have a full understanding of our own consciousness in the waking state and the dreaming state and the dreamless sleep state, until that's accomplished, further movement toward higher evolution and regeneration, illumination, it's not going to happen. So where the invitation is to really consider this and investigate it for oneself. But it's not look it up in a book. It's look it up in the records of yourself and test and verify for ourselves to do so. Yes?
In the presentation, three states of consciousness were mentioned. For all of humanity at this time. And regarding that dreamless state, it would seem that the very fact that we can acknowledge that, yes, there is a state I go through called dreamless state, even though we don't remember it, and we don't have any conscious recognition of what we did in that state, the very fact that we're aware of the state must be proof to us that we were there consciously, that we had some experience, and we bring back with us, at least intuitively, the knowledge of that experience, even though we can't remember the details in our lower minds through our brain.
Right, even though we can't remember the details of the experience in our lower minds, we can accept that there is that dreamless sleep state because we know that it's, on the one hand, we know that it's there. Intuition is active, and in fact, in that same article that was referenced, in transactions, it frequently happens that when we say we're not talking about the physical man, it's the inner man, the thinking man, the septenary. Now, it frequently happens that we are conscious and know that we are dreaming. This is a very good proof that man is a multiple being on the thought plane, so that not only is the ego or thinking man a multi-form ever-changing entity, but he is also capable of separating himself on the mind or dream plane into two or more entities, which seems kind of weird, but at the same time, analogously, how do we do that on the waking state? Do we operate in certain ways? Perhaps when we're watching children and interacting with adults, at the same time, we can have this conversation and be fully aware of what the children are doing while they have no idea what we're talking about, but they know and think they have our full attention. So perhaps that's an analogy of what can happen during the dreaming state. Yes.
A statement made earlier about the fact that one of our hindrances of going into dreams is the astral body or the psychic nature that's been animated or electrified by our passions and desires. We sometimes think that we've read it before that this astral body has a life of its own almost, that if it does not go to rest with the body itself, that there is these people that walk in their sleep, and there's instances of deja vu. We think that, well, we've been here before. And HPB says that oftentimes that is the astral body before we go to sleep or into a deep sleep state, that it has been like so animated by our passions and desires that it doesn't go to sleep right away.
So the contribution here is, okay, so there's this aspect of us which does not sometimes fall asleep along with the physical body, and yet it is not purely a part of the thinker. And as was said, it is very much influenced or directed or affected by our passions and desires during our waking state. Well, along this line, that's why we say that we want to make the effort to set conditions within ourselves when we go to bed so that they are the best that we can make for a higher contemplation, a concentrated universal idea that we concentrate on. Can we control our entire lower nature? No, that's the issue. But to the extent that we do control it, and to the extent that we make the effort to influence it, and we do have great influence over it, it would seem that, step one is to make the effort. And this experience that goes on, that HPB talks about, where, the astral will, dissociate itself from the physical during sleep. It's not quite the content of this discussion, other than to say, learning more about and understanding our states of consciousness is an adventure in virtue and knowledge rather than in vice and passion, which seems to be what's going on with the astral body when it's out of control. It's an issue of vice and passion there. Yes.
We don't know if this is a general occurrence with people, but we seem to only remember our dreams if we wake up in the middle of one. We don't know if that's typical or not, but those dreams are very, very vivid. And we don't know why would those dreams be so much more vivid if it happens when we wake up.
Why would a dream be more vivid if it happens when we wake up, or if we wake up when it happens? Well, we could say that it's a fortunate circumstance, because it gives us the opportunity to cultivate our power of dreaming. And doing so, if we wake up often, while it seems we're in the midst of a dream, and it is important to us, if we choose so, to investigate some of the issues concerning dreaming and using the knowledge from our dreams to be of greater help to others, then part of developing our power to dream would be to, if you woke up, write it down. Bring it more to the fore, and perhaps we're actually maybe advancing or creating or edifying that passageway for the truth of the dream to come through You know, it could be actually a fortunate thing. Yes.
Well, we heard the reading and the declaration, and being interested, we don't wish to put the cart before the horse. So there must be something that is given out that we should pay attention to during our waking state. And the reading, Arjuna asked these questions. What is the nature? So it seems that there are certain ways we should conduct ourselves in our personal and daily lives. But in order to do that, we have to have some kind of language to point out who and what we are. Does the personal man dream or the higher manus dream? It's confusing. So how do we put it in such a way that we can begin properly?
How do we put it in such a way to begin to properly better understand who's doing the dreaming? Well, right, actually, who is doing the dreaming really depends upon who is doing the dreaming. It's not always the higher ego. The idea that, you know, as we fall asleep, depending on what's going on in our mind, and depending on the conditions we've set within us, this sleep will come over us, it's said, like the winds of an aeolian harp, the seven-stringed aeolian harp, and depending on what aspect of ourself we are focused on, that is what's going to get caught up in the dream. So it could all be just the dream could be all a chaotic mess if it's the lower mind and kamma getting involved with this. Kamma is the basis for what are many of our distorted dreams, because it's still involved. Or it could be the higher mind. It really depends on the individual and on the day and the level of development of the individual and on his efforts and on how we live our lives. Yes, in the back and then in the black.
One of the most important ideas is what you just mentioned. There is only one mind. We can't think of it as, well, there's the personal man, and then there's the higher self or the higher ego, and they're two separate things. No, there is a thinker who can work in either direction, and that's what we have to take control of and begin, hopefully, to go into the sleep state in that higher state of mind. But that's our choice. They're not two separate beings.
Thank you. Perhaps the idea that we conveyed was a little off. That's part of the mystery of mind. You know, it's one thing to say that the mind is a principle, it is one. It's another thing to say, as HBB says in Transactions, it's one but it's not. And that's the mystery. Because on the one hand, the higher mind, in its sense as the one principle, is absolutely pure. But within the same being, is there not impurity in the way that some people on planet Earth think? Of course. Does that deprive them of higher manas? Certainly not. It's a matter of where we put our consciousness and what we do with what we have. So it's a matter of speaking and trying to get across. It's not like we have two minds, but it's two ways of using the same thing, and that's what we mean by higher or lower mind. Yes. You're next. Sorry. Yes.
In the reading from the Bhagavad Gita, it ended with the phrase that what is known to him as day is as night to us, and what is night to us is day to the wise man. So what we call the waking state for us is not where we are truly awake in that sense. We're only truly awake as mind beings when we're in that higher spiritual state. And in order to become fully awake on this state, we have to bring that through.
Thank you. So while this physical body is awake, the higher ego is, so to speak, the analogy is basically jailed. When the jailer falls asleep, the higher ego frees itself to do and go about, because it's not limited by the lower vehicles that we haven't control over. So, yes, the idea is that to reach, as is said by Mr. Judge, regeneration, it can only be done on this plane. And so, as was said by the contribution, said differently is we need to set up the conditions and make the effort and head in the direction so that the vehicle that we use on this plane is one which is evolved enough to be the best vehicle possible at this period of evolution for the inner man to really express himself through. So the idea really is for him to be fully awake on this plane. At this stage of the game, for the most part, he's not. And so we have these daily cycles of waking and sleeping. Now the adept, on the other hand, the adept does not dream. The adept, so to speak, does not sleep the way that we sleep. He will put his body down, and he will paralyze the physical body, and he will go off and operate fully conscious on other planes, doing whatever it is that adepts do on those other planes, but he's not asleep the way we're asleep, because sleep is, or rather, dreams are an illusion. They have a message, but they are an illusion. An adept has overcome all illusions. It is unnecessary for him to sleep and dream. Rather, he is conscious on all planes. So, if that helps. Now, there was a hand. Yes. Gone. So, yes.
You know, it's interesting that when a crime is committed, eyewitnesses often give such varying stories, such widely divergent accounts of what transpired. And can we use that analogy to when we dream, that if we don't pay attention to our dreams, we're not going to get much out of them, that we should make an effort, we should keep a diary, we should go through sleep hygiene before going to sleep, where we kind of put the world aside and think about higher thoughts. And then we will be able to take back useful information from our dreams, just like someone at perhaps at the scene of a crime that was really paying attention will have the facts straight, whereas other people were just kind of passive or, you know, not really good witnesses. Can we use that analogy?
Certainly, that makes sense. We could use that to take that analogy. Perhaps it's the difference between the referee at a basketball game and the spectator in the stands on his third beer. You know, what's the purpose for each one of them? Why are they there? What are they trying to accomplish? And if we choose to be the referee, so to speak, of our dreams, and there are certain things that a referee has to do to be an effective referee. First of all, he needs to know the rules of the game, doesn't he? He has to have experience in applying those rules, and so perhaps his experience was gained by actually playing the game and participating and working to do so. But at some point, his level of expertise put him in a position where his perception is of what's going on is far beyond the average spectator. And if we made the decision to do that with our dreams and write them down, if we wake up in the middle of them, have an open mind toward what color or feeling or pictures, perhaps there are certain things that are repetitive in our dreams, that might make sense. and live a life, an altruistic life, that sets up the conditions within us to what? To be receptive to the dictates of the higher ego, then aren't we creating the conditions within ourselves to better understand those other two worlds, bring the benefits of them into this world, and use them in service to others? Yes?
It might also help to review once in a while what we think of symbolically. What does a house mean to me? What does a boat mean to me? What does an ocean mean to me? Then when we have a dream, we can react on that basis. So I think a house means where you live, your personal nature. I mean, we think it's important to realize all of that. You won't find it in a book.
Thank you. Okay, so there's self-reflection, especially if there are certain things in dreams that are repetitive in nature. What is it? What does that really mean to me? You know, what that house means to someone who's lived in the same home all his or her life may be very different from what a house means to a person who owns a construction company that builds houses. Two different things there going on, right? So only, you know, we can interpret it. We can make the effort to develop our capacity to properly interpret our dreams. We are told that is possible, and the invitation is there to consider. But there are those who can interpret dreams, truly interpret dreams, and then there are the charlatans. So another person who would interpret a dream, in particular, be paid for it, or to prove to you that they can accurately do it, well, they may be psychic or not. And if they are psychic, they are looking in a world that is astral in nature. It's not pure and akashic, but rather they're looking through the lower dregs, and any interpretations they give, theosophy would encourage us not to trust that. On the other hand, of course, world literature is, if we look at the Bible, remember Joseph in the Jewish tradition was called on to interpret what? It was the Pharaoh's dreams, where he saw seven cattle that were fat and then seven cattle that were... And he interpreted this to be some long period of feast and then famine. And as a result of that, he was able to interpret it and use the dreams for great benefit to help get through the famine. So, but that's something that is, you know, for a highly spiritually developed individual who can do it, and hardly would they ever expect money in return for it. Was there a question here?
Just a comment, a saying I read once that said, pay attention to your dreams, and your dreams will pay attention to you. So I think it's an interesting kind of little window into the whole fold somebody else mentioned. The coming through of the dreamless sleep state. It's a bridgeway, so maybe it is going both ways. And we also hinted at it with the enlightened person being awake with everyone's day, with everyone's night, and that whole kind of reverse symbolism. I think it's a bridgeway that when the conditions are set, paying attention to your dreams, they very well do reach through to you as well. Maybe it's the higher mind.
So it seems we're just looking at cause and effect there, aren't we? If we make the effort, put certain causes in a certain direction with the right motive of why we're trying to do it, then, and if it's a natural thing for a human being to do, then it just makes sense that nature will avail itself, and we're making the effort, it's cause and effect. Thank you.
So it's a causeway, not a bridgeway.
It's a causeway. Thank you. Yes.
Well, it seems that if we focus our contemplation upon good books, even the best music in our waking state, before going to sleep that that has a result. In other words, high tone thinking or concentrating on those things which uplift our nature would have an effect as we pass into that sleeping state.
Thank you. So it's concentrating on things that would uplift our nature, that would affect us as we transition into that thinking state. And it could be as simple as, tomorrow, I know I've got such and such planned, and processing through how we can do it the right way the first time to be of greater service to whom we're interacting with, and have a sense of gratitude that we can look forward to doing it with the right motive. That in and of itself, and focusing on an altruistic purpose is the idea. Was there a hand here? Yes.
I was just thinking, how do you know? Sometimes this other dream which I just heard about it. Remind me of the theory of the ether. You know, everybody talking about it, but there's no one way that it can be proven to be a state.
It reminds us about a theory of the ether, and there's no one way that it can be proven that it's an actual state. Right, and we understand that the word ether in theosophic parlance we would use the word akasha, and the akasha is the tablet of memory, which records our experiences on that highest plane in deepest sleep, during our dreams. It is the astral light, there's no one way to prove that it exists. Well, we would encourage the individual really to prove it to oneself, because typically you can't prove it many of these things to someone else. But if an individual is interested in it, theosophy would encourage him to prove it to himself rather than take the authoritative statements of someone else. And we have gone over time. Our meeting is adjourned.